I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Austin Healy, and this is the Rugby Tonight podcast. On this week's show, Wales legend Adam Jones joined us in the studio to run the rule over a captivating weekend of European semi-finals and look ahead to the return of the Aviva Premiership. Here's the best of our Rugby Tonight insight and analysis from Ben Kay, Sarah Elgin and our studio guest.
OK, so let's get our guest out tonight then, shall we? A tight-head prop who started his rugby career with Neath RFC 17 years ago. He then became an Ospreys legend. And over the last couple of years, we've got used to seeing him in a Quinns shirt. He has Grand Slams to his name. He has 95 Welsh caps to his name and 5 Lions tests. But apart from his rugby, another reason why we all admire him is because of his...
hair!
Correct. Let's give it up for Adam Jones. Ooh. Ooh. It's so nice having a Welshman in the house.
Isn't it? Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't feel like, you know, oh, he can, like, help me out now.
You speak Welsh to each other, then?
I don't speak Welsh.
You wouldn't do the Welsh accent to Adam, though, would you? Like you do to me?
If I wasn't in a confined space, I would, yeah.
Okay. How are you, Adam?
Good.
Welcome back, because you've been on the show before, of course.
Yeah, it's good. Nice. Thanks for having me. Yeah.
You're very welcome. Yeah. This season's been going well, because you've been doing a lot of coaching this season as well, haven't you, and mentoring. How's that been for you? Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's been good. I'm probably, you know, the body's not where it was 4 or 5 years ago, so, you know, in weight-wise and sort of knock. So, you know, I've enjoyed it. We're lucky we've got good props in the Quinns, and I've been lucky by JK and Wig have given me a chance to, you know, help out and do bits and bobs here and there. So, it's been good.
The body may not be what it was, but the hair is.
Yeah, it's big. It's big thing, isn't it?
It's looking good.
Yeah, it's right. Brushed
How much
it.
Work does that take?
I brushed it first time in about 3 months. 2 days ago, so.
I love it. Well, it's looking good. It's looking good. We can't have you on the show without discussing, of course, the Lions squad. What do you make of it, then, for the start, that we can see it up there? What do you make of it?
Look, there's not that many surprises, I guess. There's a lot of versatility, I think, you know, especially in the back three. And, you know, Henderson, Itoje, these guys, probably a wee bit surprised Launchbury didn't make it. But, it's a strong squad, isn't it? Which it has to be do out there.
Yeah, you mentioned Launchbury. Any other omissions you were surprised with?
No, not really. No. He was probably the big one. I think, you know, everyone sort of bet the best players in the you know, Britain and Ireland have been picked, haven't they? So it's it's a tough squad.
In terms of kind of surprises maybe making the squad, maybe some were surprised with Carl Sinkham, maybe some others weren't. I mean, you work with him, you played alongside him. How highly do you rate him?
Oh, he's that sort of point in difference with a prop. You know, he's scrum and maul, and the basics are coming on all the time. And but what he can do is, he's an incredibly good ball carrier, he's an incredibly big hitter. And he's, you know, coming off the bench, sort of thing, look how quick he is. And, you know, he's like a little barrel, and there's me walking next to him. So
he's got swagger about him as well, hasn't he? I've interviewed him a few times.
Yeah, he's an emotional kid, and, you know, he's done a bit of weight since then. But he's done brilliant. He's been fantastic this year, and, you know, I'm chuffed a bit with him, really.
Why do you think Warren Gatland's so impressed with him, Ben?
I think because he makes an impact every time he's used. And I'm not thinking that Warren Gatland's thinking he'll be the first test starting prop, but I think as someone to go on the bench and come on and change a game if you're being out-muscled, you know, he can do that. His ability to carry and make metres every time he does carry. We saw him there cleaning people out. He gets turnovers. So just for that, Eddie Jones has re-termed it finishers, hasn't he? But those impact players off the bench, I think Warren Gatland has a few of those in his squad that he might be looking to use.
Yeah, and then Sam Warburton is a captain, someone you know very, very well. He's a great leader, isn't he? I mean, what else does he bring?
He's not, to be fair to him, he's not like a ranter and a raver, you know, a big, you know, long speeches and long-winded. You know, sometimes we lose the sort of intensity of the speech. But no, what he does, he's on the field, you know, everything's 100%. And I wouldn't say I was surprised to his captain because he's gone so well at six and he's had the captaincy taken off him with Wales. I thought that might have been a case for not giving him it. But his form has been, you know, since he hasn't had the captaincy, like, out of this world. So, you know, he's got a lot of leaders around him, which is a good thing for him as well.
Yeah, OK, so we've just seen, of course, how some of the players reacted to being included in Warren Gatland's British and Irish Lions squad. What about Elliot Daly? How did he feel when he heard the news? We spoke to him this week.
It's a weird feeling. I don't know how to describe it, because you literally don't have a clue that you're going to be involved. Because every other sort of squad I've been announced in, you get called before, or you don't get called, so that's a good thing. So, you know, you can understand where you are, but it was literally, that was the time you're going to find out if you're in the squad or not.
Yeah, exciting time for these players. How did you find out, Oz, back in 1972? How did they tell you?
I had this carrier pigeon, and it brought it in a fax, actually. I got fax. No, we got letters in 97. I was living with Will Greenwood at the time, and we got told that on, I think it was the 5th of April, the letter would be delivered if you were in the squad. So, being a light sleeper, I heard the postman. I ran down, saw both letters there. Craig Joyner was living with us as well at the time, and he was close to getting in the squad as well. I picked up Will's letter, put it inside my dressing gown, and then started cheering that I'd got my letter. He came down, came into the kitchen all sad face. I said, "Have you not got one?" He said, "No, I've not got one." I said, "Mate, you should have gone on that tour. You deserve to be on that tour. But can you take me to the training ground? Because I want to have a few beers and celebrate." And there's a big press announcement there because Martin Johnson's the captain. It says it here on the letter. So, sure enough, he drove me in his mini Metro, W Reg, and he was so tight he wouldn't buy his own car. And as we pulled in, one of the TV cameras came to it because he was the only uncapped player in the squad. Came to the window and said, "Well done, Will, well done." And as we pulled off, I said, "Mate, are they taking the mick out of you or what?" And then he got out the car, and as he got out, I opened his letter and said, "No, you have been selected, well done." He took it really well.
I'm sure he did. One really interesting thing about what Warren's come out and said, actually, I don't know if it's interesting, I don't know, it might happen in other tours, that he's not given the boys a curfew. He's kind of said, you know, come back to the hotel about 1 o'clock in the morning, you can carry on drinking in the hotel if you want to. That's not the done thing on tours, is it? I don't know.
Oh, look, when Oss was playing, there was probably a lot more drinking then, wasn't it? But he was pretty good with us in the 2011 World Cup. He kind of gave us, he said, come back, but if you wanted to carry on drinking, you crack on.
Okay.
Fortunately for us, England were doing what they were doing, so it made us look like angels. So we're probably just drinking as much, but it's not chucking things around as much.
Or people. Favourite party tour you've been on?
Well, two Lions tours are both good fun, 97 and 2001. 2001 was more drinking to rebel against Graham Henry. but the best tour ever was England in 2000 to South Africa, I think, because the Test squad finished on the Saturday, beating South Africa, and then there was a midweek game on the Wednesday, and Sir Clive said to the Test squad, which obviously I was in, that he didn't want to see us until Thursday on the flight, and we said, that's fine. So we had four full all-dayers. I had 6 hours sleep in 5 days.
And Benny, you're far too professional. You didn't drink on tour at all, did you? No.
Only under 11s level.
Under 11.
We had a brilliant time when pre-2003 when we went down on that tour, and we all said, why are we stopping for a week after we'd finished the games? And Clive Woodward said, we just want you to acclimatise to Perth and get used to it for next time you're back here. And basically, when we got there, he just said, right, you've got a week. I don't want to hear from you. Just go out and enjoy yourselves. And we probably had about 6 guys that nearly didn't make the squad because they got injured drinking on that trip.
Brilliant. OK, let's move on then to the England tour to Argentina. Hopefully no players will be injured drinking. With so many England players on the British and Irish Lions tour, kind of we expected some uncaps. Oz, did you expect as many?
I think this squad probably was the most shocking for a lot of people, but what it does show is really good planning for 2 years down the track. So he hasn't really selected many of his fringe players. There's only really Henry Slade there that's, and maybe Hill, that have been fringe around the squad in the Six Nations this season. What he's talking about is developing the younger players and finding out maybe 2 or 3 players out of those names in red that are going to become guys that play in the World Cup. He knows he's got the fringe players. There's a few surprises, really, big surprises. For me, there's only 2 scrum halves in the backs, which I think is a bit of a mistake going all the way over there, particularly with the game so close together. And then also, I'm surprised that Christian Wade's not in it. I mean, I don't know what more this guy has to do. You want to see him play. I think Eddie Jones sees a lot of him in the Aviva Premiership and in Europe, but you want to see him in a white shirt because no one can do what he does.
Now, who are you most pleased kind of seeing in, Ben?
It won't be popular for me to say it, but Solomona, because he is quality. Now, whether you agree with the fact that people should be able to come and qualify on residency grounds, I think actually he's one guy that could force his way into the England team if he's allowed to pick him, and he is allowed to under the current laws. So I think him, Sam Underhill as well, an opportunity to see him. We've heard great things about him. We've seen his performances at club and level. So to see whether he can cut it in an international environment as well, I think that's quite exciting because England aren't necessarily blessed with number sevens.
Well, let's have a look then at the weekend's European Champions Cup semi-final. Saracens travel to Dublin on Saturday. Not only to face an emotionally charged Munster, but a pretty electric atmosphere too at the Aviva, of course.
Well, some brutal physical matchups in that game. An unbelievably intense encounter. Probably the one that stood out for me was that battle of the Lions back rowers, CJ Stander against Billy Vunipola. Vunipola just had some great carries, didn't he? How difficult is he to play against?
I think when you've got someone who's sort of 20 stone, who can move like he does and as quick as he does is, you know, but he's also offering an offload, and he always carries the ball two hands, it's going to be tough, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, every time he carries, he's making metres.
I think England are pretty blessed to have him at the moment.
So defensively, what does that mean to the opposition?
Well, you try to double up on him, you try to nullify him, which is obviously easier said than done. So, look, you try to get double shots on him, but, you know, you've got to close his space down quickly.
I think that's the great thing about him, because one of the things we flagged up was Saracen's ability to use him to create space out wide for some of their backline players, extra numbers out wide. Also, his ability to make the right decision at the line, whether he is going to take the ball up or whether he's going to use those hands to occupy the space that's been created. We used to talk about Saracens as being a negative team. The work rate of Ashton, the work rate of Billy Vunipola is meaning they're tearing teams apart on the outside. One of the other big confrontations that we saw, and one of the other star players for Saracens, he actually got man of the match, tight head prop, Vincent Cock. Just talk us through what his impact was at the scrum.
What I like about him, he's very square. He wants to go with the loose head. What he is good, he's square, he keeps honest. He's got all his weight down, Kilcoyne.
It wasn't just... I mean, a tight head rarely wins man of the match if he's just a scrummager, does he? It was some of the stuff he did around the field. You know, I was there when Brian gave man of the match. I think he had an absolutely superb impact around the team. But in particular, some of those scrum moments, the ability to give that team a lift when under physical pressure, you can see what an effect it has on the likes of Amaro Itoje when they get that scrum penalty, makes all the difference.
Yeah, it was a pretty professional performance, wasn't it, from Saracens? And what a season, though, has been for Munster, finally dining at the top of the European table once more with their first semi-final appearance in three seasons. Well done to them. Now, there may have been a bit of disappointment for Munster fans after the weekend, but some good news this week. Razzy Erasmus has finally ended speculation, confirming that he will be staying on as Munster director of rugby and won't be leaving the province to return home to South Africa at the end of the season. So, good news for Munster fans. Right, to another Irish province now we go. And it was so good to see the Irish lads back in the knockout stages of this season's European Cup, wasn't it? As Leinster travelled to Clermont to see if they could do what their fellow countrymen couldn't. I think Leinster are probably kicking themselves, aren't they, Ben? Because it was just a poor start, really. They kind of lost the basics a little bit and really, well, ill-discipline cost them.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was the emotion in that atmosphere. We know what the Clermont fans bring to a stadium and maybe they just felt that they had to match that physically, and sometimes that can just lead to you making the wrong decisions, and sometimes it's about how clear a mind you can keep.
Leinster will watch that game back, Levy in particular, and know that he made two crucial errors for that try that they scored, and also for the Strathall try later on where he got caught on the outside.
And Adam, Nigel's refereed you on numerous occasions. On the pitch, how good do you find him to deal with as a player-referee relationship?
Depends what sort of mood he's in. He's good. He's a great referee first and foremost. But it depends how much chat you give him.
Right. He likes the chat though, doesn't he?
Yeah. But if you give it too much back, he kind of winds your neck in a bit. So he's a good guy. You're getting really well with him, you know. And there's been a few issues with certain things with his refereeing in the past, but especially on the scrum when I was playing against Gethin. But he was No, he's pretty good. He's...
Brilliant endorsement. Let's move on then. I'm going to talk about Ring Rose because obviously Levy's indiscretion and Parra kicked the resulting penalty, and that was a bit of a blow for Leinster. But they were handed a lifeline, and with Gary Ringrose's try, and what a try it was, Austin. It was a fantastic try.
Well, sensational try, and they needed it because they weren't able to bash their way through that Clermont defence. It needed a piece of brilliance. And when you see him score tries like this, you sort of think, well, his name's been left out of a certain group, yeah. But there are going to be at least another 10 players that fly out to New Zealand, and he could well be one of them. He could end up playing in the test. Martin Corrie in 2001 wasn't in the starting lineup. He played in all the tests and was one of the players of the series. So,
Corbisiero.
Yeah, Corbisiero is another one. So performances like that, whilst you are hugely disappointed with the decision of Warren Gatland, keeps you in his mind. And brilliant try, brilliant.
David Strettle, because obviously he's got to face his former club in the final. How difficult is it? Because obviously you were at Ospreys for years, and then you went to the Blues, and you must have played against the Ospreys. Did you find that difficult? Is it difficult for a professional player when they have to play against their old club?
Well, we lost by 30 points, so it was hard anyway. But no, it was hard. I was sort of with Neath, and then Ospreys for 14 years. So, yeah, I struggled, to be honest with you. I was we weren't having a great season with the Blues anyway, so it was doubly hard in the Liberty. We used to usually stuff in the Blues, so it was quite difficult, but having the shoe near the foot, really.
Yeah, and with Lawrence not being here, you can have the Stato tag. You've come up with some stats. You don't like that now, do you?
Stato tag, thanks very much for that. I think the stats show you how closely matched these two sides are and how they play the game for the final. Clermont like to have the ball, they like to carry a lot, they like to try and make metres, a lot of clean breaks, which you wouldn't really expect in a semi-final to have 9. But then you look at Saracens, they're more than happy not to have the ball and to look at dominant collisions. 75% of their dominant collisions is a huge number, and something that physicality is something one of the only sides can take to Clermont. And then in defence, this is where Sarries really get the upper hand. 91% tackle success rate, 8 turnovers, a lot of those leading to breaks and to penalties. And the big thing for me is Morgan Parra's injury. If Parrott is injured, it's a bit of a disaster for Clermont and also for me and Ben, because we'll be commentating on the final and Rado Salovic is really difficult to say at night.
I look forward to that then. Now a look at the Challenge Cup and two Anglo-French affairs at the weekend at Stade Francais. Welcome Bath and Gloucester travel to La Rochelle. Let's talk about Gloucester because in what has been a really difficult season for Gloucester, they produced their best performance on the weekend, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, La Rochelle, top 14, haven't lost at home all season. They've been the shock package over there, and they're physical and big. And Gloucester went there and matched them and outdid them on that front. Billy Burns with the interception as well. But it was a real backs to the wall. We're going to come over here and do a job. And I'm delighted for Gloucester because they'd had a bad week with the revelations that they weren't going to get the investment they were hoping for, and they put in that performance and get themselves to a final.
Yeah, and Ben's such a point of that. La Rochelle pack, they were massive. It was like David and Goliath almost, wasn't it? But they didn't get kind of drawn into that arm wrestle.
No, I think you have to, when you play teams like that, you want to run them around, don't you, as much as you can, and especially the Tony and the big set, the lock, you're looking sort of 240-kilo guys, so... The more you can run them, the better for them, really, isn't it?
Yeah, Ross Moriarty had a really good game, but it was the La Rochelle 7 that had an absolute stormer. Lavani Bottier, how good was he?
He was superb because we've known for a while about his back row colleague, Kevin Gordon, who we've seen for France, doing this sort of stuff. It's their ball-carrying ability. So, yes, they've got a very big front five, but the power comes from the back row, and these guys have that same ability, same sort of footwork we were talking before with Billy Vunipola, and the power to explode out of challenges and just get you on the front foot. And it's very, very difficult to defend and get those big shots in against powerful ball carriers when you're constantly backtracking. So I think that's what Gloucester did well.
You've seen a really nice story about him earlier on.
Well, he's actually a centre. He plays most of his rugby in the centre, yeah. He's only just recently, Victor Vito's moved him to the back row. Okay. He was a prison warder in a Fijian prison. That's not a joke. He had to keep a secret from his wife that he played rugby because she said she'd leave him if he ever played rugby.
Are they still together?
So, it's an easy choice, isn't it? So off he went, and he's living on the beach in La Rochelle, and she's back in Fiji.
Enjoying life. Let's have a look at Ngovu's yellow card. Should it have been a red?
Yeah, I think it should have been a red. It's deliberate. He drops the elbow, and it's OK if you drop the elbow and you weigh 12 stone, but when you weigh closer to 30, I think you can cause a lot of damage. Do you not think he could have made the Lions tour? Because I think he's had a fantastic season. Brilliant season.
I'm not massively sure if him and Gats are, like, on the...
Mates.
Yeah.
And that's the only way you get on the plane, by those things.
OK, let's talk about Bath, then. Bath and Stade Français, I think a lot of people, even though kind of Bath were playing away in France, I think a lot of people would have expected Bath to win that one. Why didn't they?
I think key players broke down at key times. They didn't perform some basic skills, missed tackles, a restart from George Ford, which allowed Stade to get in the game.
For once, it was the players that often have been the key performers for Bath this year that didn't at that key moment.
Yeah, and it's funny, isn't it, Stade Français, another team in turmoil, obviously in a completely different way to Gloucester, pulling through, that can galvanise you sometimes, I guess, can't it?
Yeah, I think it's happened, isn't it? We played them, and they're a tough team to play in Paris. We put 40 points on the home, but it was like more or less reversed on there. But yeah, it's obviously, I think, Parise wearing the, you know, there's obviously a lot of passion there, a lot of... Well, obviously didn't want it to happen, so it's no. I think it's going to be a tough one in the final for Gloucester.
So, while we were Wasps, we thought we'd grab a word with Elliot Daly and Kirtley Beale, looking ahead to the match with Quins this weekend.
We really, really want to limit teams in these next two games and limit teams in going into the semi-final because... As soon as you get into knockout rugby, if you give away three tries, or if you give away two tries, it's a long way back.
We love to play with the ball, but you know, with that comes risk, and we're playing at risk, and those 50-50 balls can easily be a mistake. And when that happens, teams are pouncing on that, and our transition from attack to defence is probably not quite where we want it to be.
This Quins game is going to be massive for us. I think if we can go down and put in a good performance, I think it cements us in that first spot. So that would be massive going into that Saris game because we know how good Saris are, and if they are chasing that second place to get home semi themselves, then it's going to be a massive game up at the Rico.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we've heard them say a few times that they're planning on tightening up kind of the way they play.
I think it's a huge mistake. I think if it's just a message that is out to the outside world and inside the walls of the Wasps training ground, they're saying, let's just carry on what we're doing, then fine. But I'm a little bit worried because we've seen sides do that before. They get to the end of the season, they tighten up. Now, Wasps' greatest strength this year is they can outscore any other team, even Saracens, in the Aviva Premiership. And if you look at Bath a couple of seasons ago, they were fantastic all the way until they got to April and they started to think, oh, we're conceding too many tries. Let's tighten the game up. Mm. They got to the final, they got a kick in. And I'm a bit concerned that you can't change... Wasps aren't a great side if they tighten their game
up.
If they're expansive, they're the best.
Are they not just trying to develop their game as opposed to...
I agree with Oz, actually, for once. half agree with him. I don't think Bath necessarily tactically did that in the final. I think they wanted to play an expansive game. But they came against a team that could turn it into an arm wrestle and control the agenda of the game, and they didn't have the tools to deal with it. And I think maybe that's in the back of Wasps' mind, that actually we need to be able to play in those... Knockout rugby and Premiership finals are totally different tactically. They tend not to be thrilling games. They tend to be close affairs where it's who makes the least mistakes.
But no side can out-Saracen.
I agree.
You just can't do it.
OK, let's move on then, because you can watch that feature with Beale and Daly on Friday night at 7 p.m. on BT Sport 1 HD and 4K UHD, when our guest will be Kyle Eastmond. OK, let's talk Premiership then. Let's have a look at how the Premiership table looks at the moment. So much still to fight for, of course. Wasps, Exeter and Saracens all booked their place in the playoffs, but fight for a home semi-final. Below them, the battle for that final playoff spot continues, although Leicester, I guess, did seal the march a little bit in round 22 with their win over Newcastle. Then you'll see the battle for that European spot between Saints and Quins, and just 1 point separating them. Gloucester, I guess, not out of that battle on 46. Newcastle in ninth, and if they remain there, it'll be their best finish in a very long time. Sale on 36. Worcester on 31, safe, and Bristol, as we know, already relegated. Adam, you've got a huge, huge match on the weekend. I mean, you haven't played, haven't been at the top table for a while now. Are you guys feeling that pressure this week?
I think we've spoke a lot about how we want to be in the top six. We want that everyone wants to play in the big competitions. They want to play in against your Clermonts, your Leinsters, your big team, Saracens, these type of teams. And, yeah, look, we know what, as the guy said, we know what they're going to bring. You know, it's, you know, you watch it, you watch the plays at the back, and it's all very tight, it's all very hard to defend, and there's a lot of options off each ball player. So, look, it's a, you know, CJ said and done, isn't it? But, you know, we know who, our attack when it clicks and, you know, challenge anyone. So hopefully we can get a few early scores.
It'll be a sad day for a lot of Quins fans on the weekend. It may well be the last time we see Nick Evans at the Stoop. That is, if they don't go into that kind of playoff game for Champions Cup. I mean, he's been fantastic for the club, hasn't he, guys? And we'll miss him from the Premiership.
I think he's one of the great fly halves that's come out of the New Zealand fly half factory. You know, he's, look at Carlos Spencer, Mertens. I put him up there in that sort of category, along with Bowden Barrett. He's, when he was fit, and he's struggled in the last couple of years as age has got the better of him. But when he was super fit, he was one of the quickest guys to ever wear the 10 shirt, and he could electrify a game. The early season when he got to Quins, he was brilliant to watch.
Yeah, OK, so sad news for Quins, and also, I guess, sad news for Wasps fans, because Curtie Beale, we know now, will be leaving them to go back home at the end of the summer, and this is what he had to say about it.
As a player, you always want to put yourself forward for your country, and for me, I'm 28 now, and to be able to get an opportunity to represent my country, you just can't go past that. So I'm sure a lot of guys understand that, and you know, if I can do it now and then maybe maybe come back in after
World
that,
Cup, past, we might
yeah,
see
that, yeah, that's definitely an option. But yeah. I think for now, you know, to wear the Wallaby jersey again, that'll be you know, a great honour, and it always is.
OK, talking about Exeter, let's have a look then at their match on the weekend. They're facing Northampton Saints. Oz Exeter Chiefs now have won their last six Premiership games and they've got maximum points. So they've got 30 points from them. No other team has won seven consecutive Premiership matches and got maximum points.
Do you know that? Nice one.
Thanks. Will they do it on the weekend? How do you see that one going?
I think they definitely go into the game as favourites, particularly if the rumours are true about Northampton's injuries. Pickham all left the field with what looked like a very serious neck injury. The way he fell didn't look good at all. We believe that North's not fit and Myler's not fit. So they've lost three key players there. And Exeter, as you say, are playing well. But they are a little bit loose at times. They are conceding, as we saw against Quins, some intercept tries. And they are throwing the ball around. But with that, they run the risk. They can outscore most sides. And they're quite happy to go 20, 30 phases before a try, which makes them very, very dangerous.
Yeah. And it's all about hitting your stride at just the right time. I mean, Saracens have done it for years, haven't they? And Exeter seem to have nailed it now.
They're a real good team. I wasn't massively sure about them until they played up here. They're a hell of a good team. We played them in the LV and they wasn't in their first team and it was so hard to defend, and there's also the phases they go through. I was ready to retire halfway through the first half. I was just gone, honestly. And they showed the other night when they played us, they were just pulled away then that last bit of the second half, and a tough team to play against, very tough.
What about Northampton this season then? Because it's been a bit of an up and down season for them. It's just been a little bit inconsistent. Why do you think that is?
They've been better towards the back end of the season, actually, but they had that dip in mid-season, which really affected them. They struggled to get out of. They're still not 100% right. They look good. They look at their best in broken field when they get a half break or something, and then suddenly they look back to the normal old Northampton that we're used to. Where they don't look so good is when there's a brick wall in front of them and they almost seem to run out of ideas a little bit. So, you know, as Austin said, if Pickamoles isn't fit, he was the guy that could break down that brick wall, get them on the front foot, and then the likes of PC Burrell, they can then feed off him. So I agree with Austin. I think Pickamoles in particular not playing is a huge loss for Northampton.
Let's move on to the West Country Derby then, as Bath play Gloucester. Bath's only victory in the last five rounds of Premiership Rugby was a 27-21 win over Leicester Tigers at Twickenham. So they're now 4 points behind Leicester. How much of an uphill battle do they face us to get into these playoffs?
Well, it is uphill. It's in Leicester's hands. If Leicester win both their remaining games, they go through in fourth. Their second game is against Worcester away, which I think is a tough place to go and play at the minute. So that's not a given. But if Bath can get a win, and you do sense, I mean, we've all been there when you've lost the week before, right at the end of the game, it really gnaws at you and you get a chance to put it right the following week. And that's why I think Gloucester had a really good win, but they expended so much emotional energy in that game that I think it'd be very difficult for them to go down to the Wreck and
just
get a win.
Whether a bonus point as well would put massive pressure on Leicester, because when they were even, Leicester were ahead of them on the other qualification. So if they get a 5-pointer against Gloucester, I know it's a big ask against their rivals. If they can get that, suddenly all the pressure sort of swings back onto Leicester.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of what you were saying about Bath, that it will really gnaw at them after losing that game. So is it kind of like the opposite for Gloucester? I mean, they obviously won in a good battle against La Rochelle. So will they have been enjoying it a little bit this week? Does it kind of work the other way? Or
it was a high, isn't it, you have, and this is, it is sometimes. Because going out there to the top 14 leaders, it's a massive win. You know, I don't think they're not going to rest in a lot. They're not going to be complacent or anything. But, you know, it's tough then to reach that sort of standard and level and emotional energy again.
OK, so all round 21 matches then will be dedicated to Restart Rugby this weekend, the official charity of the RPA and the Lift the Weight campaign. The Restart Rugby weekend aims to raise £10,000 for the charity work supporting current and former professional rugby players suffering from serious injury, illness or hardship, while also raising awareness for the Lift the Weight campaign, which we've spoken about on this programme a few weeks ago. And that aims to reduce the stigma surrounding mental health issues. Let's go Prem predictions then, shall we? Shall we have a look what you guys think is going to happen this weekend? Let's have a look. Oh, OK. So you've disagreed with Queen's Wasps and Newcastle Worcester. Benny?
I think Newcastle at home. Worcester finally knowing that they're safe and don't have that. I just think the Falcons, although they are just starting to tail off a little bit on their form, I think they'll want to go out with a bang. And then the other one that we disagreed on, Harlequins and Wasps, I know what Austin's going to say, but I think I think Wasps will be wanting to go out as the number one team and make sure that they are top of the league at the end of the season.
I just think the Quins Wasps game is going to be a lot tighter than people probably think, because Quins owe their supporters and the club a good performance down at the Stoop on the Friday night. And they've been, I think, quite frustrated over the last few weeks, and sometimes that brings out the best in you. And, as we said, it's Nick Evans' last game, and strangely, Quins seem to pull things out when situations like that arise.
Adam, Quins or Wasps? I'm only joking.
Thanks for listening to the Rugby Tonight podcast. We'll be back again soon. See you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.